Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here, early. Right now at Wayfair, get up to 70% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, holiday decor, and way more. Now is the time to score big, from seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, with Wayfair, enjoy fast and easy shipping, with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 70% off early Black Friday deals. Shop now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
I'm going to be honest, as the clock ticked past 90 minutes, I did wonder how on earth we were going to do a podcast and what on earth were you going to speak about. We had a proposal, we had people running on the pitch to get a selfie with Josh Sargent, but thankfully, in the end, it was Josh Sargent himself that has bailed not just Norwich City out, but this podcast out, and probably much like the show, actually, so much of it being dross for just those 20-second moments of magic that we produce and Norwich City have produced today to beat West Brom. Welcome to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast, brought to you in association with First Bus. We're static this time, we're not moving, unlike our last episode, but thank you very much if you can tune that.
Went down a storm.
They loved that, didn't they? Yeah, they loved that, but much like Norwich, did part the bus today. I'm Connor Southwell, joined by Sam Seaman, Paddy Davitt and Adam Harvey to reflect on a home win, a rare home clean sheet, Paddy Davitt, second of the season. It won't win any beauty contests, I think that's clear, but in a week and probably a few weeks where it felt like everybody needed a win, that'll do.
Just about. I mean, we've all discussed since had it tipped the other way, and as we'll get into, you know, there was a big moment after Josh Sargent's 92nd minute winner involving Angus Gunn. But, it might have been a very different feel around it, maybe reaction around it inside the stadium. But they had fine margins, as Torup himself said. I mean, first things first, by no manner of means was he looking to disguise that was not quite in the same bracket as Portsmouth away in December, where they really did abandon Hofball, if you want to be a bit prosaic about it, and he was just sort of grinding out a result that day and they got an attritional point. Now, with Sargent doing what he can do best in this division, they've elevated it a little bit, but there was a lot of similarities between those two performances, and he wasn't looking to disguise that. He said, you know, again, this was a response to that recent run culminating at Bristol City, of course, where they've conceded too many goals. You look at the goals against Colham, that's where the problems lie. He said that to Sam on Thursday at Colney. And it's very clear now off the back of A, the selection, B, the formation, C, the way they've got that result, that they've spent a lot of time, certainly this week when the international started to come back, working on how do we stem the flow of these concessions, which have completely curtailed any real sense of playoff momentum. Whether it's back or not, probably a bit too early to say, but they're certainly in the conversation again tonight, given their result, another result. So, yeah, not one that'll live long in the memory, not one that Torup would want to add to his showreel, but I think in the context of where it's gone, one win in eight leading into and falling periodically the wrong side of the line in these tight games to fall the right side feels good, and hopefully it leads to more this season. But also, it's, you know, probably too early or premature to say it's a watershed moment, but if this group are starting to, in the clutch moments, understand what they need to do and how they can navigate themselves into a winning position and then hold on to that winning position, then you know, this might be an important link in the chain.
Yeah, it's futile, this business, isn't it, trying to analyse football? Because if we'd have been sat here and the game would have finished on 92 minutes and we'd all trudged off, I don't think words like pragmatic and game management would have been used, Sam. It would have been very different. I mean, again, some stats, 42% possession. That's the lowest that Norwich City have had this season, period, full stop, home or away. In any competition, that's the lowest share of the ball they've had. The one before that is by 4%, was actually in the 5-1 win against Swansea, where they had 46% of the ball. Likewise, 1-1 draw with Leeds earlier on the season. And then you have to go back to August with 42% against Blackburn in what was that, the first home game of the season in terms of their possession. So it was radically different. It's the first time they've played a back three, stroke five, as it panned out for most of that game, since the 1-1 draw against Southampton, which was pretty much a surrender act, wasn't it, in that January. And they did come away with a point. Josh Sargent again late on, I think, actually, in that game, rescuing a point for them. So It was an abandonment of what they're trying to build under Yannis Ovtorop. He said to Paddy post-match, it's not what he wants to do, and I don't think it's just what any of us want to watch, but obviously it's the ends in the end have justified the means.
Yeah, but I think there are more concerns coming out of it for me than positives. I think it depends on, obviously, your perspective, because if you're Torup and you think that a playoff qualification is possible, which is something he keeps saying, then I suppose, yeah, you're right, the ends do justify the means. But I think it just depends a lot on your definition of what they're really trying to do, because he also spoke a lot going into the game about wanting to show fans, you know, what they're all about, what they're going to try to do next season, trying to keep them on board and give them a good experience going home. And to be fair, I'm sure most of the Norwich fans who are there today are now sitting in their living rooms feeling pretty good and feeling pretty positive after that moment. So in one sense, yes, you've done that. But if you want to look at the long term and showing people what it's going to be next season, I think they've already shown that they reject that style of football. You know, you go back to David Wagner and they were grinding out results like that all the time. So if that was purely what this group of fans wanted, and of course, you know, it's not just one homogenous group, there are certain people who would take that performance and that result every week. But in terms of the response to Wagner and how he decided to do things, I think they've already shown that isn't really going to keep them satisfied in the long term. So if the message is, over the next few games, this is what it's going to be like next season, then that was quite a worrying step. But you've got to also duel that with the playoff race, which is something that Torup still feels his team is in. So if you're him and you're of that mind and you are completely committed to reaching the playoffs, then I can understand it. But I think a lot of it comes down to the context as well and what follows after this. Obviously, Paddy referenced the Portsmouth game. I think that was one that probably all of our minds were drifting back to at times in that game today. But I remember at the time saying, if that is a performance in isolation, just to get them out of a rut and to stop the poor form that they were in at the time, then that's fine. And actually, I think now, having seen that they did return to Hofball and they did return to a more positive style of play, not many of us are looking back at that saying it was a turning point in Torup's reign and it was disastrous. But if for the next seven games after that they had played that style of football, I think it really would have been quite worrying. So I'm of a similar mind this time. I think if it's a one-off and it ends up getting them a first win for a long while, it ends up boosting the mood a little bit with a very positive moment at Carrow Road, then that's absolutely fine. And I'm sure at the end of the season we'll be looking back saying maybe it was necessary. But if that's the tactic going forward, just to try everything to maximise the small chance they have of getting into the playoffs, then I probably wouldn't be pro that. But I don't think that is what they'll do. Obviously, we'll have to wait and see. But I get the sense that from Torup's words post-match, he will try to go back to a slightly more proactive style of play. And yeah, I'm sure that's what we'll all hope to see at Plymouth.
Yeah, and I mean, to follow on to that point, Adam, we were obviously inside Carrow Road today. We managed to avoid running on and trying to get a selfie with Josh Sargent. So we showed great restraint there, all of us. But the feeling that I had at points in that game was a mardiness from fans, and you can understand why in terms of the way they approached it. But in terms of individual decision making, passing backwards, passing sideways at points where they wanted them to maybe push the accelerator a little bit harder at some decision making generally, it wasn't a very good game. So you can understand why maybe people were agitated. But, you know, we spoke about this. I think if West Brom would have scored, it would have been, I don't know if toxic would have been the right word, but we'd have been heading towards we'd have been on that road, I guess, towards that point. So it might not be a big goal for their season, but it feels like for what they want to do, and, you know, we've spoken about it, Paddy spoke about it in the last pod, in terms of garnering up some optimism heading into the summer and, I guess, restoring faith in what they're doing under Yannis Ovtorop, it could be a big goal, potentially.
Yeah, definitely. I think maybe there's a little bit of a sticker plaster feeling over kind of what wasn't the best performance, and for much parts of it have gone the other way, and, or, you know, that moment at the end does go in for West Brom, then I think, you know, as we've all said already, this gets spoken around very differently. But I think if you go to certain places away from home and you approach it in that manner, you probably get away with it a little bit more. If you go to Leeds and get a point, or you go to Sheffield United and get some form of result, or Burnley, wherever it might be, I think maybe the lens and the view of it is slightly different. But for me, at home against anyone in the Championship, Norwich shouldn't really be, you know, sitting back and having that approach. I think certainly you go back to that game, you know, against Southampton, prime example. I think we all spoke around it at that time, despite the fact that Southampton at that stage were flying and you know, probably one of, if not the better teams in the Championship. Nobody felt at that moment Norwich should be approaching the game in that manner. So I think for that to be the case today against not even like a top team in the division, West Brom are sort of only, you know, well, at this point, 5 points ahead of where Norwich are at, with the attacking talent they have on the pitch. I personally don't think that setup was required, but I can kind of understand it, you know, given the defensive side of the game you spoke around in the pre-match press conference and the fact they'd worked on it collectively and individually. And clearly it is the root of a lot of their problems at the moment and their downfall. And if they do firmly believe that they want to try and push for the playoffs between now and the end of the season, whether you believe that or not, they had to get the win today. So the fact they managed to do that, and I think everybody would be bouncing out of Carrow with a positive feeling, irrespective of maybe, you know, their view on the game as a whole. Yeah, it's a huge momentum boost ahead into Plymouth, who are certainly starting to get a little bit cut adrift at the bottom of the league. And who knows, if they manage to get a win there next week and other results go in their favour, then maybe things get spoken around and this result looks even bigger than it is right now. So, yeah, we'll see. But, I just think, to stop the rot, what was starting to build prior to the international break and that frustration you felt after certain home games against Preston and Derby, etc., etc., that feels like a big moment and a good moment. And I think most Norwich fans will enjoy it between now and the next game next weekend.
And that's the thing, Pat, isn't it? I mean, we've spoken so much about injuries, about soft concessions this year. And I guess you could argue it both ways. You could say, and maybe as Sam said, that the fact they have to go to that extreme, and it feels like it is an extreme, to stop a rot and to prove that they can be defensive and to get a clean sheet is concerning. I don't think it's too strong a word compared to maybe where they want to be and where how they want to play. The fact they can't find a balance, it feels like, you know, they're either uber proactive or we see what we saw today. And I guess for Torup as well as a coach, the fact there is this pragmatic side, again, you can argue that both ways. You can argue that as being a real positive, that he's willing to tweak his idea and that he's willing to be slightly more pragmatic. But equally, I think, you know, and if you're a player in that dressing room and you're being asked to do something, you know, do you then start to look at a coach and say, well, if you're willing to change and you maybe don't believe in it 100%, why should I? So I think both of these things can be argued both ways. Where do you sort of sit on it?
Well, on the player point, because you referenced it after today, I alluded to it in the opening comments, that clearly they did have discussions with everybody collectively involved for buy-in this week. And he talked about how the players, he looked at the players and listened to players, and what the players fed back to him was that
Can I jump in? Because yeah, I asked Josh Sargent this question. I said, did the players have an input or was it coach-led? And he said it was coach-led.
Well, he's not going to say the players are leading Johannes Torup down.
In terms of like inputting, did you have a collective sort of discussion? He said, no, it was coach-led.
Well, we're splitting hairs. Coach-led in terms of they've set the parameters and given the floor for the players then to obviously feed in, you know, what they thought about it. I think it was a collegiate discussion about, look, lads, this cannot go on. And Torup broke it down very black and white on Thursday. And he reiterated it again today post-match. Forward thinking, there's no issue. They are as good as anything in a division. The metrics tell you that. But the contrast with a goals against column, the work out of possession culminating in, you know, the manner of those two Bristol goals, you know, that was almost for me, maybe, and everything that, you know, we take from sitting down and the discussions that have gone on, then the reaction today in terms of approach would tell you that maybe that the line had been reached. And for Torup, to answer your point there about, you know, why is it so far removed? Is there not more a nuanced blend that can be still incorporating all those elements that we associate with his style of football on the ball, rather than almost it's an either or and you have to sacrifice that element to get the solidity that they had today? I'm pretty sure he would not have to go to that length, but, you know, when you're this far into the season, when the goals against are still stacking up, when the concessions are so infuriating in terms of the individual and the collective errors, you know, maybe it does reach the point again where he found himself probably for that Portsmouth game in terms of off the ball. In the here and now, we have to do something drastic, effectively. And it is quite a drastic move to abandon's too strong. But, you know, to bench Marcelinho Nunes, to bench Jacob Wright to put Jakob Sorensen into a back three. All of these feel quite dramatic measures. But I don't think I disagree that it probably has got to this point, that something had to change drastically, because you cannot continue along the path that they're on, which is effectively any go-forward momentum they're generating with what they do on the ball and the goals they're scoring and the chances they're creating and the style of play is completely nullified. And we know that because where are they in the table prior to today? You know, they're 13th, they're 8 points, 8 places outside the top six. So for me, it shows quite a good deal of self-awareness from Torup. And as he said himself, he cannot be a stubborn coach. He can't be, this is my way, we will continue, we will bang our heads against the proverbial wall until my style of play prevails. No, he's looked at it, and this far into his first season in the Championship, it's quite clear to him, by the setup he's adopted today, that he has to have that ability to almost reinvent. And it wasn't a great watch. The stats about possession would underscore that, albeit, you know, there were still two or three very big chances. The Sargent one in the first half where he, you know, as he showed with the winner, you'd expect him to score that. So even within that template, I think they created a lot more than they did clear-cut than they did at Portsmouth. But for me, I don't see it as a, certainly not as a weakness or, you know, a flaw in what he's trying to do in the purest form of off-ball. I think it's just a realisation that, you know, to get to where they need to get to in the Championship, which is to be bona fide top six contenders from next season, it's about what you do as much off the ball as it is on the ball. And I think what we'll hope moving forward is that you can incorporate the elements we've seen today, the elements we saw at Portsmouth, which are the uber out of possession work, but in a more refined sort of style that doesn't abandon or doesn't mean you have to sacrifice having a player like Nunes, for example, having a player like Jacob Wright in your midfield and trying to have control of the ball, control of possession, control of territory. Because I think there has to be a middle way, because I don't think Johannes Torup is going to want to be presiding over what we saw today as a routine representation of his coaching style and philosophy. It's so far removed from it. But for me, what we see today is actually healthy in that regard, that he is a coach who has an awareness of, OK, I don't have all the answers. You know, my style isn't residually effective in its purest form, so we'll have to distill it, refine it. And obviously, as we move through the end of the season and into the transfer window, I think they'll obviously look to do that in terms of what they add to the group, what maybe goes out of the group. And then let's see, you know, what that looks like when it all comes together from next season. But yeah, for me, I don't see this as this a red flag or, you know, an alarm bell. I think it is just an acceptance that, you know, maybe the journey that Farke went on as well, you know, that you cannot come in, certainly as an overseas coach, with a clearly defined style of play and then drop that into the Championship and just expect that that's going to prove good enough to do what Farke eventually did. The Farke at 18-19 was not the Farke 17-18. We all know that. We all know that that was a journey, and this is a journey that we're on now.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure in that season, 11 of the 15 wins came when they had less of the ball or something like that in Farke's first year. So that's certainly not what people remember. And sometimes it is about stripping it back and going back to basics, and that can be as much about confidence building as anything else. And sorry, just to bounce it back to you, because we mentioned the mardiness and some of the unhappiness there was in the stands, and there was a tension, I think. Maybe that's probably the right word. It felt like there was a tension for a lot of it, and I think if the game would have gone in West Brom's favour, it probably would have flipped and the dial would have been raised on that, and to an extent understandably so. But there was one in particular when Antti Siinäs came off, there was a handful. I'm not going to make it out as if it was the whole stadium that was booing, but there was some disappointment in that. But that was a fitness issue rather than anything tactical.
Subsequently he's been pointed out to us a dead leg. He reported at some point in the first half, and then he's obviously gone back in at half time. You sit down 10-15 minutes, it seizes up, and I think it was within 10 minutes of the restart, so they've obviously tried to give it an opportunity, but no, he wasn't able to, you know, get up to the levels he needed to in terms of his fitness. So nothing moving forward going into the Plymouth match cycle, but in the here and now today, well I'll say that
stage.
with an asterisk, yeah
it's probably got a double leg break or something.
no but that was the reasoning, so it wasn't a simply let's hook him, because I mean, let's be honest, I don't mean he had his best first half, but I don't know exactly at which point in the first half he suffered this dead leg, but he certainly wasn't as good in terms of in possession and taking care of the ball as he has been. But just to clarify, that was purely fitness related why he got hooked.
Cool. Thank you very much. Another element I think that we have to put into today, Sam, which maybe has been an element that's been missing or has been under the microscope, is goalkeeping. And clearly, I think today what we saw from Angus Gunn was a much more assured performance. It will be the two saves. The one in the first half from Hegum, where he flicked it really good, strong hand. And obviously the one late on that is probably the more high-profile one and led to Torup at the final whistle, giving him, it was a massive bear hug from Carl Bartley. And then obviously Ruari McConville clearing off the line as well in that moment. But I just felt overall, there were a few crosses that he came forward, just exuded a lot more confidence today. And that was good to see. It looked more like the Angus Gunn that we saw last season.
Yeah, it was really interesting because there was, I think it might have been his first save of the game, was that not quite so confident.
But like in the last few weeks, I was thinking about it, in the last few weeks, that's the sort of thing that's been going in.
Yeah.
And it went the other side of the post. Yeah, so we speak about margins.
Yeah, so maybe he almost felt a bit freer from that. I didn't realise there was a deflection. When I was watching it live, I didn't realise there was a deflection. So it was definitely better than it looked at the time. And yeah, maybe that just sort of freed him up a little bit because he did look a lot more confident. I don't know if it's down to maybe some clarity that he's got as well. Obviously, Torup spoke about the fact that they would be, you know, maybe giving or informing people of their decisions over the international break. And it does feel like a lot of this season he's probably gone into games not really knowing what's going on. He obviously gave those quotes a couple of months ago where he spoke about the fact that there had been no communication between him and the club about a potential new contract. So, yeah, for whatever reason, he did look quite a lot more assured. And where Norwich haven't had those kind of big moments at times, I thought they did have those today, as you pointed out, those big saves at big times in the game as well. And I suppose when you win 1-0, it's always a big time in the game, because obviously I think the way that the game had panned out and the way that Norwich had set up to defend for so much of it, if West Brom did get that first goal, they would have been a bit lost, because what's that team set up to do ultimately after that? So yeah, I thought his performance was really, really important. And I think that is, as you say, what Norwich have lacked at times this season. Going back to the Bristol City game, the other side of the international break, there was that world-class save that George Long forced himself into by pushing the ball straight to Naki Wells. But other than that, I thought the difference was, and we've spoken a lot about quality in both boxes, Norwich this season, how often have we gone, that was a brilliant save, or, you know, that's really helped them out at a key time. Whereas that was probably saved Norwich 10, 15 points last season. And then you look at the other end, Bristol City, in their box, they've got a goalkeeper who pulled off two or three really important saves that nobody expected him to make at really important times in the game. So, yeah, that almost flipped for Norwich. Maybe the time away injured gave Gunn a little bit more time to try to sort of concentrate his game. But yeah, it's almost typical, isn't it? The fact that over the last few weeks, it feels like people have been almost coming to terms with the fact that he probably will leave this summer. People have been finding reasons why that's a good thing. And then he produces a performance like that. And I think for some people, it will change their minds. In fact, sort of across socials and speaking to people, I've already seen some people who were fine with Gunn leaving, saying actually maybe it wouldn't be too bad to extend his contract. But I think for a lot of people it will also be almost sadness and a reminder of actually what Norwich have got, and that if he does go, they're losing somebody who on his day is probably, can be the best goalkeeper in the Championship, maybe barring Trafford at Burnley. And, you know, a Norwich fan who came through the academy originally and who really wants to do well for this club. So, yeah, I thought it was actually, if he does end up leaving this summer, nice that he did remind everyone of that today. And, yeah, I think he deserves a huge share of the credit for the 3 points.
I do think there were some shoots just before his injury at Blackburn, that maybe he was beginning just to turn the corner a little bit. And I know there's been a lot put out there in terms of stats of Norwich's goalkeepers this season, which I do think need context. So, for example, they don't take the position of a goalkeeper into context, a lot of them, or into consideration. So that can skewer a stat. That's not to sort of say that it's a lot better than what it is. I just think it's maybe not as bad as perhaps those numbers would suggest. And I don't think he's as bad a goalkeeper, Adam, as maybe the stats have suggested. It's been a tough year for him, probably, and I'm sure the contract situation hasn't helped, and he said it himself, having that lack of clarity when you've got a young family and all of those things isn't useful and does probably play on your mind. But equally, he's not probably, and I'm sure if he was here he would say the same, he's probably not produced the level that he would expect of himself really.
Yeah, I think, you know, particularly off the back of last season where there was so much praise for him in sort of the back end of the season, and there was obviously the talk around him being the best goalkeeper in the Championship, and a lot of people, that wasn't even a debate in certain sort of quarters. So to then go from that extreme to where he's been in recent weeks and months, I'd imagine would have taken him by surprise, and probably his, you know, sort of people around him and other people. But then again, you don't know everything that's going on behind the scenes and the background, and maybe there's been things in his life personally that's taken a toll, because you can see it within players. And also confidence probably comes a lot into it as well. I think, you know, when confidence is running through your vein, you see it with a striker, you know, when they're scoring goals, they just keep scoring goals. But when you can't find a goal for love or money, then it becomes a lot more difficult. And I'd imagine that's the case for goalkeepers as well. You know, probably seen bits of the criticism online. I know he's sort of got social media accounts, and I'd imagine, you know, that's a key pillar within today's game, and it's obviously quite easy to say just block it out and don't let it affect you, but ultimately you're human beings, everything online and every comment you see probably does take some sort of mental effect. So then you've got the contract stuff on top and everything else around it, and probably not being as well protected by the defence at different points this season either. So I think there's a lot of mitigating factors for probably his form and his performances, and there's also the other side of it where he'll admit himself that he's not been at the level. So I think all of those factors come into play, but there's an opportunity now between now and the end of the season, 7 games to go. It's whether it's a case of him trying to play for a contract here and prove his worth, and he is the number one for next season, and Norwich should renew that contract, and there should be no debate about trying to bring in somebody else from domestically or overseas, or alternatively he's playing for a future somewhere else and obviously potentially trying to get a move to somewhere else in the top flight somewhere, or wherever it might be he ends up. So, and obviously to Scotland as well in the summer. So there's a lot of kind of reasoning for him to try and pull his levels back up between now and the end of the season, and today was a good starting point.
Yeah, and let's hope we see a lot more of that between now and the end of the season, particularly given some of the games coming up. I suspect he's going to be busy, but I think those chances that we reference, basically all season that they've resulted in goals. We'd be talking probably about a 3-1 defeat for Norwich City. So the fact he did make those saves hopefully is a sign maybe that he's beginning to turn a page on it a little bit. Right, let's end part one with our segment. Just the ticket, of course, brought to you in association with First Bus, our sponsors. Paddy, get us started this week. Who's just the ticket for you?
Well, I was thinking of this on the walk up, which is
pretty proactive. That, for us,
that's very new for me because, I think I was pretty poor on the bus episode about just the ticket. But actually, I was going to say Angus Gunn, so I'll only basically echo what AH has just said there. I thought, you know, yes, McConville played his part, but that was a match-saving intervention, you know, point blank. And, got a little bit fortune with some of those first-half stops, but his general game, as you alluded to, Connor, was far more commanding. And I don't want to make this, about Reyes and Long, but when he's in the goal and he's in that type of mood, it does underline the chasm in terms of Norwich's goalkeeping quality, and for me, that, let's hope that is a springboard to that level of performance between now and the end of the season, because if it is, you would think Norwich would fall the right side of enough of these games down the stretch to at least make it interesting. I'm not going to say they'll get in the top six, but that's the level of performance they need from Angus Gunn moving forward, so he was my just the ticket.
Yeah, I can see that. Sam?
Callum Fisher. I think whenever I see a right-footed left-back or left-wing-back, I always respond negatively, because so often I think it just doesn't work, and it's not about the quality of the player, but just as a tactical idea, the fact that you can get so far up the pitch and have a left-back rushing onto it and then need to check back onto their right foot, I think it so rarely works, and actually we've seen this season. sometimes that Fisher struggled there, Jack Stacey struggled there, and you feared that it would be more of the same when you looked at the team today. But I actually thought it was fine. I didn't think it was a problem whatsoever, and I thought when he got on the ball, I can't remember really any mistakes. I thought he dealt with Tom Fellows much better than he did at the Hawthorns. Wasn't much from him, even though I think a lot of people would pinpoint him as the man to sort of look out for in the West Brom team. So yeah, I thought it was positive defensively. I think the system sort of helped him with that as well. But the fact that having a right footer at left wing back didn't really hinder them offensively too much either, I think that also helps. And I thought he really contributed to that with quite a calm performance, when you think positionally he's not only moved from right to left, but he's got a bit more of a sort of up and down role. It's not just the sort of maybe slightly deeper inverted role that he plays at right back. He had to be a little bit more attacking, support Borja Sainz a bit more at the other end of the pitch as well. And yeah, I thought when you took all of those factors into consideration, it was a very positive performance, and Norwich probably needed one from him, given the fact that, yeah, he was in such a difficult sort of tactical position. So yeah, I thought a pretty good performance from him. He got the man of the match from the club in the stadium at the end of the game, and yeah, I thought that was deserved. So yeah, he was just the ticket.
It's going to be Sargent or Sainz that win the player of the season. I think that's obvious, yeah. And we'll have that debate another day. I am increasingly feeling that he should be third for what he's done this season. I mean, his minutes have increased by, I think, about 800%. I think I worked it out pre-game this season. He's comfortably, if everyone's fit and available, Norwich City starting right back. I mean, you have to go back to the summer and think about how comfortable Jack Stacey was in that position. Played pretty much every game last season. Was very good as well for Norwich. Very reliable in David Wagner's system, which was about athleticism and a lot of vertical running. Was very effective to basically sort of worm his way into the team and do that on merit. I think it's been incredibly impressive, coupled with obviously what you say about the various sort of changes that he's had to his position. Adam, you can have Josh Sargent. He's on the table.
Yeah, I'll take the obvious one. I think Marcelino Nunez would have been my other shout, but yeah, Josh Sargent obviously has earned Norwich 2 points today, and after what was probably a tough international break for him, you know, I mean, the first game he hit the post and there was the one ruled out for the offside in the build-up, and he was getting a little bit of criticism from certain parts of the American fan base, and obviously not getting to feature at all in the second game. And I'd imagine that was probably playing on his mind a little bit, and to miss the opportunity he had really early on in the game, it would have been quite easy, I think, in that moment late on in the game, probably to have just snatched at the first effort, but the ability and the awareness to take the touch, cut back and find the bottom corner, and just kind of that unleash of just passion and, you know, sort of almost built up frustration in front of the snake pit was obviously a big moment. And you know, it's obviously it changes this whole podcast and the whole feeling of the fan base and the mood of the camp, everything over the course of the next week. So for that moment and for sort of his overall form, certainly ever since the sort of Christmas break, it just underpins why he is the best striker in the league.
Yeah, described it as his favourite goal of the season, actually, just in terms of the relief and ecstasy he felt about it as well. We'll be speaking more about him in part two, and obviously the international break and some of the words that maybe have frustrated people a little bit. But yeah, I mean, he's exceptional. I mean, it's a finish that is above, not just the finish, but the whole move, the engineering of the chance for himself is, as we've said, above the level, and it's very difficult to see how he is going to be playing Championship football next season. I'm going to go for a slightly more obscure one. I'm going to go for Jacob Wright, who didn't play a big part in the game, but I thought the part he played was very good in terms of helping Norwich speed the game up, getting themselves forward and on the ball. Clearly, it was Nunez's pass, but I thought some of his play and comfort in possession was good. He's reminding me increasingly a little bit of early Mo Leitner at Norwich in terms of his use of the ball and just how he makes them tick a little bit. And as we hopefully now see Norwich stray more towards being a little bit more progressive, particularly at Plymouth next week, I'd like to see him play an increased role increasingly in that midfield. And I'm increasingly feeling maybe a McLean Wright Nunez midfield could potentially have a lot of excitement for Norwich. And liked what he did today. So he's just the ticket for me. Join us for part two. We're going to be talking injuries again. We're going to be talking Josh Sargent. And we're going to look ahead to a long trip to Plymouth. See you shortly.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast, brought to you in association with First Bus, reflecting on Norwich City's brilliantly entertaining 1-0 victory over West Brom at Carrow Road on Saturday. We've done the game, we can leave that in the past. I'm not sure, unless you boys have got anything else to pick out of it, there's much left to say on it. So let's start with more injury news, Paddy, more injury concern. Callum Doyle, we've had this whisper for a little while over the international break. Big blow, isn't it, to lose someone? Well, I guess you can look at it both ways. It is a big blow, but equally we're probably going to be talking about a player who isn't going to be at Norwich City next season. So does it present opportunity for other people in the same hand, I guess?
Well, it did today, that's absolutely sure, yeah. No, I think Lucas Mahovo is probably the key to this now moving forward. I think Cordoba's doing enough over this body of work that he needs to be in there. Duffy, I think, still has to retain his place in that rear guard. So it's probably left-hand side for Doyle. And if Mahovo, which we hope, is back in the mix and in under consideration for Plymouth, you'd go with him. So for me, it's a blow because he's a very good player on the ball. And in the purest forms of what Torup's trying to do, he is perfect. And you can see why. As we know, when we sat down with Lee Dunn at a recruitment, they pursued him for as long as they did. I think March of last year was when they started the wooing process, because they clearly identified him as potentially in a coach like Torup's system perfect. And when Norwich have been on the front foot, yes, he's looked good. But for me, I think there are defensive issues, absolutely. And certainly in a left-hand station, I think he does get isolated. I don't think physically, athletically, he's got what it takes in one-on-one defending. So I don't see it as a major issue, if I'm honest. I mean, the basically the latest bulletin is that they think he's going to stay here, do his rehab here. They think potentially he could be back for the last two or three games. If Norwich's playoff hopes have been extinguished, then that's probably going to be an irrelevance. But so it might not be season over, but Yanis seemed to intimate he was coming out of the Bristol game, and then maybe felt something then in the training that he did over the international period. So continues that frame, sadly. And it is a blow because he is a good player. But I think in the bigger picture, if Mahovo, for me, is the key now, if Mahovo is available and can continue where he was starting to suggest he could maintain his form, then I don't see it as a major issue, other than it's another body. But McConville's come on today and affected it in a big way in that key clutch moment with the Gunn and Bartley incident. So, you know, he will feel, if it's not to be in terms of Doyle, then maybe it gets McConville up the pecking order. And again, he is part of the mid to longer term future. So, yeah, I mean, it's not ideal, clearly. But I think in the bigger picture, I don't see it as the debilitating impact it would be if it was, heaven forbid, a Sargent or a Nunes, you know, in other areas of the field. I think, as I say, with Mahovo's emergence now and Cordoba looking like he's getting to grips with what's required at the level on a consistent basis, I think, it's a shame for the lad, but I don't see it as derailing what Norwich are trying to do in these remaining seven games.
I think we probably all think it's unlikely, but we had this conversation with Dobbin. So let's transport ourselves to a world where maybe Doyle is willing, Manchester City are willing. Would you have him back next season?
No, not for me. I don't think so. No, not for the funds it would take to make that deal, because that's going to impact on what they can do in other areas of the market. And I think there's other parts of that squad that need more surgery. So I just think the defensive elements, effectively he is a defender. Let's get it straight. That's what the badge says. So you'd want him to be, for me, better at defensive parts of his game, because I don't think, and to be fair, I'm not saying anything that Johannes didn't do. I think it was after the Middlesbrough game where he had a torrid time against Ben Doak, Liverpool loanee, that afternoon, the 3-3 game. I think Johannes basically said, it's risk or reward. That was his phrase with Callum Doyle. And we know what the reward is, but there's a risk element to it. And for me, if we're talking a permanent deal, no, I wouldn't think that was one that I would look to pursue.
Yeah, I think I probably agree. It's going to be interesting to see where he ends up. Like you say, I just think the mobility factor is probably the barrier with him in the Premier League at the moment, because clearly, technically, he's a very good footballer, but when you step up a league and you're playing against, you know, the physicality, and we saw it with Brighton in the FA Cup, some of those guys and that sort of mid-table level, you need to be able to withstand that. And I'm not quite sure he's going to be able to do that, particularly if it's not a Manchester City where they're dominating the ball and games every week. So it will be interesting to see if it's not Norwich where he does end up. And I guess, Sam, maybe you probably agree with that in terms of where he is and probably Norwich's needs as well this summer. They've got two left backs. They've obviously got Cordoba as a ball player. It feels increasingly, as we begin to let our minds wander to what maybe the summer would look like, if it's not Doyle, obviously, right, we know the right side of the centre back, Brad Hills, is going to come back into it. You've obviously got Rory McConville, Shane Duffy's still around. You're only going to have Cordoba. Does that feel like one that they're maybe going to have to look at?
Yeah, I think so. I think, like you say, it's obviously very densely populated on that right side of defence. But in terms of left footers, especially when you look at the injury record that Jose Cordoba has had this season, it feels like it would be quite a major risk to go into next season without one, because ultimately, you know, Cordoba gets injured and you're throwing somebody like a McConville or a Hills in, not only as, you know, into a league where they've never really properly played before, but you're also putting them on their uncomfortable side. It's either that or it's Shane Duffy on the left side, and I'm not sure you'd get too many people voting for that, given some of the struggles he's had on the ball, even on the right-hand side. So, yeah, I think that's definitely something they do need to address, and Torup actually said at his pre-match press conference, when I said to him, I was actually speaking to him about Hills, but I said it's going to be a pretty sort of densely populated battle for game time in the centre-back area. I listed him, McConville, Adegboyega, who's currently at Dundee United, and he said, and there might even be more who we're not speaking about. So I think that was probably a thinly veiled reference to transfers, and probably he would group sort of the whole centre-back region into that. So, yeah, theoretically, I think having Doyle in there wouldn't hurt, but I agree that it's the amount that it would cost to buy him, it's not worth that as a proportion of your transfer expenditure this summer. I think they do need a left-footed centre-back, but not so much that, you know, that's worth spending 80% of their budget or whatever it would be. I think they need to look at several areas, and the number of areas will probably expand when we consider the players who will leave or be sold. So, yeah, I think I'd be more looking at 4 or 5 million for somebody in that area, and I would be absolutely shocked if you'd get a Callum Doyle for that sort of price. And I also think, to be honest, he's not maybe quite the same force that he was early on in the season. I think when he came in, we were all almost shocked by quite how good this signing was. And I still think he's good enough to comfortably be in Norwich's starting 11. But I don't think he's the transformative presence that he was when he first arrived. And yeah, I think I would tend to agree that good player, definitely, but not one I'd be, you know, busting the bank to try and sign permanently.
Well, it's 15, I think, Man City wanted last summer for him. Yeah. So, yeah, if we're talking those realms, then I agree, a bit too rich for Norwich, I would imagine. Adam, I mean, obviously, I spoke to McConville in the week, and, I mean, it is an interesting centre-back battle, and Brad Hill's clearly doing phenomenally well at Stockport. I think probably as we anticipated, that's turned into a really good loan, albeit we'll ignore the red card for a moment. But he's played a lot. He's played in a high-level team, a team going for promotion. Torup clearly feels he's ready for the Championship. Shane Duffy's going to have a year left on his contract. That's going to be a really difficult one if they do. And I'm not saying they do, but if they do get to a stage where maybe they want to look to move him on, that's going to be difficult on the money that he's on and the situation that he's on and the age that he is as to where he goes. It's really shaping up to be an interesting one. And, you know, McConville, I asked him about it, and he said he's looking forward to that competition. So it feels like that is one area of the pitch, that right side of centre-back, where they look pretty well set at the moment with those three.
Yeah, McConville's not done his claims any harm based on, you know, the Bristol performance, where I thought in that 8-9 minutes, wherever he got, well, he was pretty positive, you know, had the effort that probably on another day finds the back of the net, and some of the passes, just, you know, the comfortable nature on the ball. You know, he's obviously come through at Brighton, which you look at the way they play, and we saw that, you know, in full view against Norwich at Carrow Road in January time in the FA Cup, and, you know, obviously he will be comfortable enough to sort of I suppose, adapt and be part of a Norwich group that want to play that way, particularly a level down in the Championship, where I think, you know, he's proved himself in, you know, sort of in international setting now on a couple of occasions. I know Northern Ireland had a tough night the other night against Sweden, but, you know, he would have played 90 minutes against Alexander Isak, who arguably is one of, if not the best striker in the Premier League at the moment. So those sort of experiences and even just the minutes he's now starting to get off the bench in the Championship is only going to help him move his claims forward into a pre-season where he's going to have, you know, 4 or 5 weeks to really sort of progress his claims to try and be a starter in this group. And I think naturally, you know, the likes of Shane Duffy, as much as he's been pretty good, I'd say, over the course of this season, there's obviously been difficult moments, but on the whole, I think certainly a marked step forward from spells towards the end of last season. It does shape it up for an interesting conversation. I think Brad Hills, you know, I think as much as when he came back last season, I think we saw some really good stuff in pre-season. The fact he'd only really played one season in League Two, it was quite difficult to see him make that leap up to the Championship. I know it's been done, you know, Kellen Fisher has sort of proved that, you know, you can make that step, Mahovo's proved you can make that step, but in a really competitive area it was always going to be quite difficult to edge out an experienced Shane Duffy. So next summer, now proved himself at the top end of League One against, you know, some pretty good teams, and I think that gap at the top end of League One, certainly to the bottom end of the Championship, is not as vast as, you know, a certain sort of step up from League Two to the Championship. So he certainly pushed himself forward. Adewuyega obviously having a pretty decent time up in Scotland at Dundee. You can obviously question the level a little bit more up in Scotland to, even in comparison probably to League One in certain sort of quarters. So
is he still playing as a fullback though? Because a lot of his minutes had come as a fullback or something.
Sort of a bit of both, but maybe more centre back at the moment.
Okay. Yeah, so obviously he'll have another pre-season opportunity, hopefully to try and progress his claims as well. So, and then obviously then you've got the potential additions on the left hand side if you know they sort of want some more competition for Cordoba if they don't go in for Callum Dawes. So I think it is exciting. It's an area where, you know, I think over the course of the season there's been some difficulties, but the addition of McConville and the fact you've got Brad Hills in a better position, yeah, certainly makes it intriguing. And I probably couldn't really name you who's going to be in the back two for that opening game next season. So that makes it all the more exciting heading into pre-season.
Yes, and of course there will be names, I suspect, that will be added that we don't even know about yet. So that's the beauty of this. And Paddy, on that front, I guess we've got to speak about Josh Sargent. There was some comments from him in The Guardian, I think it was, whilst he was away on international duty about his future that I think concerned a few people is probably the right way of framing it. He was asked about that today and after the game, and he was very quick to point out that also in that same interview, where I haven't got the exact quote to hand, but he said it about having options on the table. He spoke about how he was very happy at Norwich, how he had, what was it, 2-3 years left on his contract here, how his family are very happy here, how he's very happy here as well. He was very keen to clarify that point. But equally, I must admit, when I saw it, I didn't think it was anything that was particularly earth-shattering. He is going to have options this summer. That's clear. I would be shocked if we get to the end of the transfer window and he is still a Norwich City player, because I'm not sure it serves his career any purpose to keep playing Championship football. It would be, what, his third year, fourth year at Championship level. There does come a point where actually it feels like a good time for a player to move on, and increasingly, particularly given what we've witnessed today and maybe how capable he is at this level, it does feel probably like, not that anyone wants to see him move on, but maybe for him it probably feels like a good moment.
Yeah, I think we're in the Madison quarter now. I think there's an alignment potentially this summer for all parties, and that isn't, yeah, to reiterate, Josh Sargent pushing or agitating to get out of Norwich. He clearly is enjoying it, because if he wasn't, he wouldn't be producing either side of these frustrating injury interludes over the last two seasons. The productivity he has done.
He's not ripping his top off after a winner if he's not enjoying it.
Exactly. 18 goal contributions in 25 league games this season. It's ridiculous. Last season, let's get it straight. When he came back in January, he and he alone got Norwich in the top six. His goals got Norwich in the top six, because there was no chance of them getting in the top six without that guy at the top end of the pitch. So there's clearly nothing in his demeanour or how he's carrying himself or how he's representing Norwich that would suggest that he's going through the motions or he's looking to pastures new. I think he was just very candid. And I mean, the fact is, you know, there was firm interest from the MLS last season. We've not talked about that, but he's now 12 months out from a co-hosted home World Cup. That will be a factor, I'm sure. It wouldn't surprise me there's more MLS interest this coming summer. as well as potentially, you know, you'd think Premier League clubs would look at him, maybe newly qualified Premier League clubs as well, because they'll be seeing in him a player who has the potential, because that's all he is now with Premier League, because, you know, he didn't really show that in the brief Premier League exposure he had in a Norwich shirt. He was obviously playing second fiddle to Teemu Pukki when he first came in the door. So there is always that question mark. I guess you have to be honest, in the injury element, that will be a question mark for potential suitors. You know, if you're going to commit the sums that it will probably take to get him out of Norwich, do you think you're going to get value for your return in terms of his availability? So there are factors in play that, to me, doesn't make it definitive that he will depart this summer. But by the same token, I'd agree with you, Connor. I think pull all the strands together and it feels like this is the summer that more naturally would seem to be Josh Sargent departing. And if he was to go, I think, much like Maddison, I don't think there would anybody in a Norwich fan base who could clearly begrudge an opportunity at a higher level, given what he's given in terms of service. They'll make a handsome profit on what they initially paid to get him from Werder Bremen. So the pure finances of it as well will make sense, I'm sure. There's no way he'll be going on the cheap. We saw that last summer in terms of the bargains that were driven for Rowe, for Ida, for Sara to an extent as well.
What will it take?
Well, this is the point for me. I mean, if it wasn't the fitness related issues around him, then you'd have to think it'd be 25 north of 25. But I do think that will bring it down a touch. And that also allied to he's not proven at Premier League level, so maybe in the 20 to 25 bracket.
Will it definitely be the Premier League?
No, I don't. I think I'd probably put my money on the MLS, if I'm honest. Given that there was firm interest, which probably will be there again this summer, you know, and you've seen it subsequently. There are clubs the other side of the Atlantic who are committing those type of sums to get players from England and other parts of Europe. You know, so the plates are shifting now. There's clearly a financial power in the MLS that they can make those deals happen. So, you know, it didn't happen last summer. I could see it happening this summer, yes.
Yes, me too. I think Bournemouth were one of the other teams that liked him, but obviously they went in a different direction with the lad they signed from, was it Portugal?
Evan
Nilsson. So whether they come back to the table, I don't know. And that is, I guess, the challenge for where Norwich fans are at, because as much belief you want to put into this, Sam, it does, and, you know, we spoke about this a little bit on the last pod, it does become demoralising when you see Sargent, and I guess we're going to put science into this category. Nunez as well, he's an asset that is depreciating every month that his contract gets closer. If we're going to realistically talk about probably two, maybe even three of those players going this summer, if I'm a fan, I'm on the outside going, well, how possibly does Norwich get better by losing those three?
Yes, it's really difficult. I think that's why fans are so desperate to hold on to players, and obviously, you know, it is a trading game, and Ben Knapper will back himself to either sign, you know, the adequate replacements or to have them already in the building. But, you know, not every team sells their best player and then goes and gets Emi Wandia and Teemu Pukki in the same transfer window. So it definitely isn't as straightforward as, you know, as rotating as the belt seems for Norwich over the last decade or so. It's not always as straightforward as losing your best players and then you just, you know, you sign someone for $2 million and they end up replacing them. But I think they will feel confident about some of the players who are already in the building. I think Ante Sienatz is probably a prime example of someone who is already showing quite significant signs of improvement over his time at the club. I think, yeah, it definitely wasn't his best display today. It felt a bit like sort of pre-Christmas Sienatz at times. But we've definitely seen the heights that he can hit. And if you take almost the average level of his performances over the last couple of months and take them over a season, I think he could quite comfortably get to 12, 15 goals next season, which, you know, bearing in mind Sargent's injuries, wouldn't be far off his numbers. So I think they have a few players in the building who will be better next season, but the jump from almost those regular starters to the quality of the key players like Sainz, like Sargent, like Nunez, is quite significant. So to be honest, I can completely understand some of the worries that those fans have, because right now all of the talk of, you know, bringing in players who improve and that revolving door of quality, it's all hypothetical and theoretical, because all of Norwich's best players at the moment, if we're being honest, were here before this current project started and before Ben Napper really had a chance to sign players. And that's not necessarily a criticism of him or of Torup, because I think the way that they want to do things, it's too early to judge a lot of that business. But I can understand that when those fans have had zero guarantees so far that Norwich can sign players who immediately step in and become star players, I can understand why there would be some anxieties around how things would play out next season. But, you know, it isn't the Stuart Webber era. It isn't the, you know, Smith and Wynne-Jones era anymore. They won't have to sell someone for 20 million and replace them for literally one. You know, they will have a decent amount of money to spend. I'm sure that's something that Mark Attanasio would admit if we asked him about that. So it probably isn't quite as high stakes as it has been in previous seasons. But this is part of the reason why I think there's a lot more pressure on Napper this summer than there was last summer. Because last summer he had a bit of an insurance policy, a bit of a backup in the case that even if the transfer business went absolutely dreadfully, and I don't think it has, but even if it did, he had the guarantee that Shane Duffy was decent enough at championship level. You know, Jack Stacey would do a job. Angus Gunn was the best goalkeeper in the championship the prior season. Sainz, Sargent, Nunez, they've all proven that they can deliver. But there might not be so many of those guarantees next season. And that's why I think there is a bit more pressure going into this summer. But it's probably too early to write him off. And yeah, I think we'll have to wait to judge. But yeah, definitely a big job on his hands.
Yeah, and they're not going to be able to replace Sargent is the short answer. Yeah. It's going to be about sharing more goals around and maybe not being as reliant on him and Sainz for goals as they have been. It's going to be about, you know, players from midfield scoring a few more and defence a few more. And that is how you balance that off with a better goal-scoring collective than maybe they've got at the moment. Adam, let's just briefly engage, because I think we are all of the view that Norwich won't make the top six this season, unless any of you aren't, and in which case shout and you want to engage with that. But let's briefly go to where Johannes Hoftorup is, because and I do think, you know, I know there's been a lot made of, oh well, he said that he still believes they can get in the top six. Well, he kind of has to, yeah. Because if he says, oh, there's no chance, then, you know, what's the point when there is even a very small percentage? I think it's going to be a low points tally this year that gets you in. When you think Norwich got in last year with 73. That was enough. I think it's going to be about 68 the way we're heading at the moment, unless there's a real sudden burst in form. You take the points per games of all the relevant teams that are in that hunt. That means Norwich need to win five of seven. Even with your most optimistic hat on, can you plot a path to Norwich City winning five of their next seven games?
Not really.
That poor said it all. Yeah.
I mean, I'm thinking of the games. I mean,
so they've got.
You'd back probably to try and go to Plymouth and get a result, given their cut adrift. But then also, I can also see the flip side of that, and that's just Norwich rocking up there and finding it quite difficult.
Sunderland at home.
Yeah, no,
they've got a lot of injuries at the moment.
See a point, but not three.
Burnley away.
Yeah, I think that's a tough task.
Where'd they go after that? I'm stuck after
Portsmouth
that.
At home.
Portsmouth at home.
They probably could. Yeah. In theory, should win that game. I think Cardiff at home, they should probably
Millwall
beat them.
Away.
Millwall's always going to be a difficult test. And Borough, they just notoriously, I know they had a really good spell against them for six or seven games in a row, but then subsequently for the last four or five games, it's been nothing but an absolute nightmare heading up there. So for those purposes, I just think it's going to be tough. They're just not consistent enough. That's the problem. They haven't won enough games back-to-back this season. You know, you look at kind of some of the games they've had in recent weeks, and that's where the missed opportunities come for me. It's the Derby at home, it's the Oxford at home, it's Preston at home, it's all these other games that they've had in and around it that's cost them. It's not the games up ahead, because I think if it had been a case of they'd have took another 7 or 8 points from those games, then absolutely they probably need to win three or four games from the last lot, and I could probably name you three or four they could win. But to win five, yeah, it feels a real uphill task. And that's obviously assuming they don't pick up any more injuries or knocks along the way, which, given the way this season's going, I wouldn't rule that out either. So, yeah, I can't see it. And even if they do get in there, I mean, let's be realistic. If they play Leeds, Sheffield United or Burnley...
might be Leeds at this rate.
Yeah, it could be Leeds, yeah. They've as much as they've been competitive at different points against all of those sides, do they have enough over two games to beat them? I'm not sure. And then against, you know, you then get to the final and you potentially play a Sunderland or, you know, even Coventry, the way I know they've had a tough couple of games, but obviously on a good run and have good momentum. So it just feels an uphill task. And obviously the fact we've already outlined that they're probably going to lose some players this summer. If you go into the Premier League, we've seen how tough it is up there and the sides have all dropped straight back down. I just don't think they're in the right place at the moment where it'd be a benefit to get promoted as much as the financials would be good.
Yes, agreed. And when you think of also their sort of best run of form, I think twice this season they've gone 3 wins from 4. I think they're the best patches of form they've had this year. So then say they need to win 5 from 7 is a big jump. And then, you know, I think it's now 13 wins, draws and defeats. So that sums up what they are. Paddy, to finish, trip to Plymouth next.
Via Stonehenge, Connor.
Oh, no, don't even go there.
We might as well.
Yeah. Excited?
Which part? Let's induce excitement, not the 8-hour drive. I know that.
Well, we've
against this pie, maybe.
April.
Other
pies are available. Since the fixtures came out, I think we've been looking at April, and any Norwich City fans, I'm sure, have been as well, has been pretty hellish. We've got Plymouth. Obviously, Sunderland is midweek, but we've got basically got back-to-back weekends: one in Plymouth, one in Burnley. We've got a trip to Middlesbrough. Don't know if any of you boys are going to try and find any niggles to get out of any of those trips, but it's a lot of miles that Norwich City fans are going to be covering in the next few weeks.
Well, and on that front, I won't name him, but he's a very well-known fan for many years standing. He told me his schedule next weekend is Plymouth, and he's solo driving, not like us sharing the driving. Mm-hmm. So he's going to Plymouth. Then the under-21s, I think, are playing, he said, in Southport on the Monday, which anybody doesn't know, we're talking Merseyside area. Mm-hmm. So he's going to drive from Plymouth up to there. And then he's got to come back for the Sunderland game on the Tuesday. And then, as if that wasn't, on the Sunday, he said he's going to take in a rugby league game. He's going to go watch Featherstone Rovers. So Plymouth, Featherstone, mm-hmm. Southport, Sunderland. What have we got to quibble about? 16-hour round trip to Plymouth. Bring it on, yeah.
Can't be worse than last year. There you go. There's a positive.
I loved the trip. First time I've been there.
I did until they were 4-0 down, and I must have. Yeah, lost no, his,
I wasn't. I wasn't. I hadn't got to the point of the actual game. I was thinking more the hospitality and how friendly we're. Home park, new ground in terms of ticking off. People were really, yeah, real. I mean, as you would be if you're a Plymouth fan. You know, if it's your club, then you know. You're passionate about it, and that passion was there. They're obviously newly promoted, weren't they, last season? So, yeah, I don't mind when we actually get there. It's physically getting there, and obviously when we get there, we don't want to repeat, as you rightly said, of the carnage that unfolded. Although, you know, it didn't, heaven forbid, if we get this, what we saw today down there after a 16-hour trip.
It's going to be dangerous for us driving back, because I think that won't be good.
But, yeah, as I say, you know, that's the calendar. So I'll go Rom manager. We've got to play them all. We've got to do them all. So, you know, bring on Plymouth, bring on Burnley, Middlesbrough. And then we've got...
Nice date with Alex Neil in there as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, nice little short trip to go and see Alex. So, yeah, but... yeah, nobody should feel sorry for us. I don't know even why I'm going to appeal for anybody to feel sorry for us because, you know, we'll be fortunately getting paid. I mean, you got, what time are them coaches leaving is what I would question.
Well, that's a good question.
Because we'll be doing it overnight, clearly.
Let us know if you're going on the coach. Let us know what time you're leaving.
Serious devotion, that. Yeah. Both in terms of finance and in terms of time as well. So, yeah.
Particularly given where we're at in the season and maybe the playoff outlook as we sit here today. That seems like a good place to leave it. Thank you very much for watching. If you have done on YouTube, thank you very much for listening. If you have done on all the various podcast platforms, thank you to First Bus, of course, for sponsoring. Thank you to you, gents. And we will see you maybe a little bit blurry-eyed after that long trip home from Devon next week for the next show. Until then, after 93 minutes of real dross, it was 20 seconds of magic to win for Norwich City. See you soon.